time I will, but the position of mature devotional service is circumstance doesn't create peace. Like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes in the Durya Kandamani, there's one kind of case that he describes, Ruchi, where when the elements are right, then one experiences a very wonderful taste for chanting the holy name. But when there's a further stage of taste, and even in the realm of attachment, when the object is what one is attached to, then in that state, just hearing the sound of Krishna's name, one becomes jubilant. Nice example from Chaitanya Bhagavat is when Srivas Thakur was in a passing by on the road, and he heard Devananda Pandit describing Srimad Bhagavatam, and he wasn't a qualified speaker of the Bhagavatam, but he was speaking topics about Krishna. And Srivas Thakur went into the assembly and he heard some name mentions of Krishna, and he just swooned and fainted in ecstasy. Just his mind went racing to Krishna, not understanding what was going on. He was removed from the assembly by Devananda Pandit's men, thus offending Srivas Thakur. So, not depending upon the elements, but simply the topic of Krishna. Kapila Dev describes this to Devahuti in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. In the highest stages, where bhakti is not mixed with the modes of nature, the mind just goes like the Ganges River during rainy season. It just goes. You don't have to direct the Ganges. Now you can go downstream. When there's topics of Krishna, the mind just goes to Krishna. That's mature stage of devotional service, and nothing can replace that. That's when deeper forms of taste are found. But so we discussed some ways of increasing that. So on this issue, on the topic of aligning the body, the mind, and the heart, so we can chant with taste. Here's a statement that comes well known. You probably have all heard this before. Most have heard this before. The final purport of Chapter 3, Canto 1, where rapt attention and hearing the message of Bhagavatam is what's being discussed, and Prabhupada writes, one should hear with rapt attention from the real person. Then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. It's a secret. Tell everybody. And it'll still remain a secret. Because persons don't want to follow the secret. Here's the secret. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So there's the Gopurams. Physical. Mental. Then the mind is in rapt attention. There's deep feelings within the heart towards the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is, glorifications of Krishna or Krishna's holy name. Then Prabhupada concludes, but somehow or other, if one hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning one can surely see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So, alignment was our previous topic. Now we're going to go back and focus on...
Thank you very much.
We're going to focus on our dearmost friend, the mind. And understanding the role of the mind in chanting the holy name. So, back to something that we spoke about earlier. In the beginning stages, we have this divided spirit. We have that which we know and have faith in. That's that which is divine. And then we have this conditioned thing. That's our baggage. And we're very attached to our baggage. And we want to hold on to it. In fact, it would be really neat if we could take our baggage into the spiritual realm, but we can't. It has to stay outside, at the door, at the gate. Just like we leave our shoes outside the temple, we can't. It's an offense to enter. One of the first offense mentioned in Nectar of Devotion in Seva Aparads. Entering the temple with one's shoes or on palanquin. So, the mind has this divided attention, that which we know and value and have faith in and that which we're attached to. And in fact, that which we're attached to, according to the indications of the modes of material nature, which are ever-changing, and to the factor of time, there's so many proposals that enter the mind unceasingly, like waves in the river. Unceasingly they're flowing. And most of the time those voices are, or quite often those voices are, that which don't lead to elevation, they lead to degradation, at least in the conditioned stage. And many people dwell on that platform, on the platform of the mind. Prabhupada describes as four planes of consciousness, bodily, mental, intellectual, and spiritual. We want to get to the spiritual plane of consciousness, but we're stuck on this platform of the mind, so the mind has to be properly directed. Unfortunately, the mind is very prone to give us bad direction. And the mind wants us to accept that it's right. Its reading of situations is right. And we should accept. There are many examples. There are scriptural examples and our own personal examples of ways in which the mind gets it wrong. One scriptural example comes to mind is King Chitraketu. He was such an advanced, after he was delivered by Narada, he became an uttama, bhakta, topmost platform of devotional service, so much so that he was able to associate on a platform of friendship, confidential friendship with Lord Shiva. So one time when exchanging with Lord Shiva in such a way, it was just speaking actually in praise, but it appeared to Parvati to be a criticism of Lord Shiva. She cursed him. So his intention was to praise Lord Shiva, and she took it as an insult, and so she cursed him. And that happens in life. Braj Vihari was sharing with me, that's one of the things that's involved in his service and ISKCON Resolve, is that misunderstandings between persons' intentions. So he recommended, I was curious in the topic, we discussed it, so he recommended that I read a book that it's been reprinted four or five times, the title of the book is something like, "That's not what I meant." And the author is a woman, PhD, whose marriage fell apart because her intention in her dealings with her husband was to be supportive of what her husband wanted. And he read it as not being honest and straightforward what she felt. And she gave many examples, and the end result was the marriage fell apart. So then she started studying this whole subject, and the book is on that subject. One example that she writes of is the ugly American story. One American woman was visiting in London, and she went to a cafe for lunch, and she saw all the little cubicles were occupied, but there was, you know, the like cafe, there's one side and the other side, and so there was a boyfriend, girlfriend, or husband, wife, a couple seated on one side, so she sat down, and her intention was to respect, you know, their relationship and not interfere, and, you know, not engage them in chatter, just like respect that they were together. So she sat and made her order and, you know, minded her own business. And after some time, she sensed some tension from their side, and she asked, "Is there something wrong?" And they said, "Yes, you're being rude." "What way am I being rude? I didn't know that I was being rude. I didn't mean to be rude." "Well, you just sat down and no conversation. You know, just like, you know, you Americans are all alike. You're just crude and crass and can't even say hello to somebody." And she explained, "Well, maybe we have a cultural difference here, but my intention was to respect you. But you're taking it as, you know, that's not what I meant. My intention was to respect both of you. No, you're sitting here together, and I'm a foreigner, and this is your country, and I'm in your space and in your face, so I'll just be, you know, like a little girl and just be quiet. Mind my business." Like that, in my life, I'm sure in all of our lives, there are situations where we've even gone out of our way to specifically, deliberately somehow show to another person, "We support you, we care about you, we want to do something to demonstrate that." And they read it exactly the opposite way. It happens, right? We can all tell our stories. So the mind isn't seeing the reality necessarily. The mind sees the story. The story according to however the mind processes things, and that's reality to the mind. Although it may have nothing to do with really what, it's more a statement of our mind than it is of reality. But the mind holds on to it. And holds on to it. And holds on to it. So the chanting of the holy name, if done properly, can mantra, it can release the mind from all of that. In the conditioned state, I'm going to read some scriptural quotes to support what I'm now saying, but in the conditioned state, it's the false ego that's behind the mind, that drives the mind. And the false ego likes to process things in such a way to me. Like selfishness. Even our intention, like, you know, we may think of ourselves, we're not like that. But, you know, the mind is very tricky and can trick us into so many things. Unless we become attached to Krishna. It's the only solution. Because the other solution is we're going to get mixed meaning, incorrect messages, and operate on that basis. So the punchline of all of this, is by attentive chanting that good news, the material mind is dissolved, like an Alka-Seltzer commercial or something. Lord Kapila Dev describes this to Devahuti, that only by the process of bhakti, not only the material mind becomes controlled, the material mind is dissolved. And then the spiritual mind is active. And what's that spiritual mind? It's singular, focused attraction to Krishna. Here's the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam as Rishabhdev is teaching his sons, headed by Bharat Maharaj. For scriptural reference, those who like to take notes, it's 5:11, Canto 5, Chapter 11, Texts 16 and 17. Rishabhdev says, the soul's designation, the mind, is the cause of tribulations in the material world. As long as this fact is unknown to the conditioned living entity, he has to accept the miserable condition of material body and wander within this universe in different positions, because the mind is affected by disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. It creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy within this material world. So that's the mind is the greatest enemy part. There's some good news. It's also the best friend, or can be. The uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. Oh, king, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. So we're going to do, after some time, a little bit of time, a little exercise on chanting the holy name to Krishna. Describe this. I was told by a few persons who attended the one of the previous Japa retreats, it was one of the most powerful experiences of the whole event, besides the 64-round day itself. Because it's personal. It's attempting, it's knocking on the door. And this chart, there's the heart. We're calling with the heart, with feeling, to Krishna. And we're asking him, you have the key to that inner chamber that we're using this phrase, sacred space. Please open that door and allow me to experience your reciprocation. Of course, there is reciprocation, but experiencing that reciprocation is the idea. But the topic here is the mind. Now, how is the mind oriented? And as long as the mind is oriented, asat Krishna, or thirsty for the temporary, thirsty for material happiness, and it can be gross or subtle, just, the so-called happiness of people appreciating us or recognizing us, or, using Prabhupada's words, family, society, friendship, and love. It's not that a devotee is supposed to be a stone, but the worldly feature of ego satisfaction, of that kind of possessive proprietary attachments, and enjoying that which is mind, I and mind field of enjoyment, it blocks us completely from the pure holy name. Here's another very important teaching on this point, again from Rishabhdev, 555 Bhagavatam. Prabhavastavada bodha jato yavana jigasata atma tattvam, that verse. Yavat kriyat kriyastavada idam manovai karmatma kamyena sharira bandha as long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subject to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its result in actions. A person who is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmakam, or colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. So, the mind is in the language of the other verse, it's the representative of the soul. And such a representative of the soul that we accept the mind to be ourself, like I am feeling something. I am feeling unhappy. I am feeling happy. I'm feeling hurt. I am feeling proud. I'm feeling something. And we're guided by and identifying with. That's how the mind works in the conditioned state. But the mind can be conquered or subdued, as Rishabhdev teaches, through the medium of devotional service, service unto Krishna. And the most powerful, potent, and important form of service to a guru and Krishna is the chanting of the holy name. Service to the spiritual master means following the instructions of the spiritual master, and that service, most important service of all, is our chanting. Our chanting is a form of service. There's a nice story in this connection, a story of Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami of the time of Lord Chaitanya. What he's very famous for, or well known for, is his intimacy with Lord Chaitanya. Before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he requested Lokanath, please go to Vrindavan ahead of me, because after I take sannyas, I want to go to Vrindavan. That was his sankalpa. And you make some arrangements so you and I can be there together in Vrindavan. We'll have intimate personal association together. And Lokanath didn't want to go, because it meant being separated from Lord Chaitanya. I'll go with you after you take sannyas. In other words, let us stay together now. No, you go. So he couldn't say no, but he didn't want to go. Then Lord Chaitanya instructed him again, you go. So he took the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, fell at their feet and blessed them that his journey to Vrindavan would be successful, without telling the reason why he was going to Vrindavan, because it was a secret, it was confidential. So he went to Vrindavan. And he lived in Vrindavan in such abject austerity, but was like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji level of austerity, just completely austere life, but completely absorbed in the holy name. Completely absorbed in the holy name. So one time, the place where he stayed before Rupa and Sanatan found out where he was in Vrindavan, when they went and invited him to come to Vrindavan town, he was staying far, far away in a very remote village in the direction of Govardhan Hill. Sometime when you go to Govardhan Hill, you can visit that place where Lokanath stayed. Very simple, simple, simple place. Even to this day, it's not spoiled yet. So, he was chanting the holy name all day long with one assistant, and one Brijbasi farmer came and asked Lokanath, where can I get some water? simple, understandable question. And Lokanath didn't even respond. He just continued chanting the holy name. And so the farmer was surprised and went to the assistant and asked the assistant, where can I get some water? And so the assistant right away wanted to serve the guest and went and got some water for him. And when he came back after the farmer had left, Lokanath chastised him severely. He said, you're not fit to live in Vrindavan. He said, you're attending Radha and Krishna and you lead them to get water for the farmer? He knows where there's water. You're serving Radha and Krishna. So the lesson is, when we're chanting, our mind, the tendency for the mind to be distracted by things that are important to do. We all know what that one is. The list is unlimited, how many important things we have to do instead of chanting, especially when we're chanting. We may not attend to those things when we're not chanting, but when we're chanting, we have to attend to those things. So important. So many things. At least these few things. They need to be done right away. Then I can chant. And then, you know how it goes. Unless you're clear what being in the presence of the holy name means. And so, this is a function of the mind. How spiritualized is the set of values of the mind? Or, conversely, how much asat Krishna is there within the mind? So, now I'm going to go through a description of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls the cure. Now we've seen the problem, now we're going to get the solution to the problem. Three steps, they're progressive, for engaging the mind in the holy name when chanting japa. An overarching principle is, he didn't use this language, but the binary feature of the mind. Those of you that are computer folks, you know what that means. It's a one or a zero. So the mind is similarly a binary processor. And there's the spiritual side and there's the material side. And we need to move to the spiritual side. The tendency is to oscillate back and forth between the two, the one and the zero position. And we should strive for this spiritual position, you know, always. In the spiritual position, it does not mean neglecting my worldly responsibilities. It means seeing those worldly responsibilities in a spiritual way. And that becomes possible by proper chanting of the holy name, by your proper execution of devotional activities. This is an alignment question or topic once again. So how to get to the spiritual side with the mind? Be ruled by the internal potency and be drawn to Krishna by the attractive power of Krishna. Just like the prayer of Gopal Guru, that part you missed, but O Radha, please attract me by your power. How to teach me how to serve Krishna and attract me to the lotus feet of Krishna. O Krishna, you're all attractive. Please, with your power, draw me to your loving service. So, first step that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, this is spiritualizing the mind. So it will help us as our best friend to carry us to Krishna, is to contemplate the characteristics of the holy name. There's so many prayers. We've read some, and you all know your favorite ones, where the glories of the holy name are described, and contemplate, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words are, regularly consider, contemplate, the reality of the Holy Name, what the Holy Name is. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that Krishna's names are unlimited, all of his spiritual potencies are invested in each and every name. A name is very merciful. There's no hard and fast rules for chanting the Holy Name. He makes approach to him so easy. He's inviting us, he's appealing to us, he's canvassing for us. How merciful is the Holy Name? Just chant the Holy Name with faith. Like that. Like the approach to the deity form of the Lord. The scriptures teach us it's of a hellish mentality to think of the deity, to regard the deity as made of wood or stone or metal. And similarly, it's an offense to the Holy Name to think of the Holy Name as a material sound or a karmakanda elevated mantra that will bring us some good blessing. But the Holy Name is not different than Krishna. Absolutely not different than Krishna. So, that's the first of spiritualizing the mind. Pointers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Next he indicates that having contemplated the spiritual portent of the Holy Name, then you offer prayer to the Holy Name. You speak to the Holy Name or pray to the Holy Name or plead with the Holy Name to accept me. Now, like we described, Krishna has invited us. He's already accepted us, but have we accepted him? How fully have we accepted him? So this please accept me prayer, recommended by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is from our own side, opening our own heart to Krishna in the form of the Holy Name. That our heart be receptive to and accepting of Krishna's reciprocation. And as Prabhupada taught us, Bhaktivinoda Thakur previously said, please engage me in your service. That's how we want him to accept us as his servant. To spiritualize the conception that the mind holds. Then the third recommendation that he makes is, while appreciating the portent of the Holy Name and making this request for Krishna to accept us in his service, to offer prayers to Krishna with heart-rending lamentation. So, those of you that live here in Sharanagati are singing his songs, and his songs are filled with that. And this is a direct statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's helping to open the heart to the Holy Name, or to spiritualize the mind to receive the fullness of what the Holy Name is. Heart-rending lamentation, though in humility, of why we're so hard of heart, like the Bhagavatam verse that we read just a moment ago, from the second canto, of the steel-framed heart. Here's Sanat Kumar Samhita, where he prays to Radha and Krishna. Oh Radha Krishna, you are my protectors from the ocean of material existence, which is filled with sons, friends, household, and land. Therefore you are known as the destroyers of fear for those who are surrendered unto you. Interesting prayer. There's this worldly tendency side, but you're the protector of your devotee who calls to you sincerely. Like Queen Kunti's prayers to Krishna, please remove this material portion of my affection from my family members, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. In essence, leave just that spiritual portion, that which is based upon you and my attachment for you when we're dealing with our worldly affairs of life. O Radha and Krishna, O ocean of mercy, you are my only shelter, and thus I take shelter of you, although I'm a fallen soul. Please be merciful to me and make me your servant. So, the role of the mind, this is the second Gopuram, the role of the mind, how the mind can be more accelerated, more attached to the spiritual reality of Krishna in the form of his holy name. So, we're going to do a little exercise, and included in that is chanting of japa for about a half an hour together, in the mood of calling Krishna's name and visualizing our own deity or temple deity or form of the Lord that we can easily fix our mind upon, and Uttama is going to explain the whole thing.